Nashville, Tennessee, this is the Campfire Cafe on Equestrian Legacy Radio.
You got the cure for my condition. You are the drug for my addiction. I'm on a high and I'll tell you I'm gonna love you till I die with true conviction.
Starting things off this Thursday morning with their song Sugar Rush, and I'm your host, Gary Holt. We want to wish our host, Bobby Bell, out in Santa Clarita, California, the best as she is preparing to make a big move. And so she's not with us today, but hey, Bobby, if you're listening, we're thinking about you back here in Tennessee today. We do want to think about the folks that are in California and going through these wildfires. This is just so devastating, the folks that are out there, and our prayers are with all of those folks in California as they're dealing with the wildfires. So please keep them in your prayers. And but we have a big show today. We're very excited to have our first guest joining us, and that will be Claudia Nygaard, and she'll be joining us in just a few minutes. But we want to thank our sponsor for Equestrian Legacy Radio, and that is Legacy Benefit Group. For over 30 years, Legacy Benefit Group has helped businesses and individuals create, protect, and preserve their financial legacy. Now take a deep seat in the saddle, and when we come back, we'll be talking with our guest Claudia Nygaard today on the Campfire Cafe on Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world, streaming live, online, and on demand at equestrianlegacy.net.
Pigtails flying in the wind at 90 miles an hour. Mama's on the front porch with our faces white as flour. Papa's on the back porch yelling, go girl, go. I grab that Appaloosa's reins and hover down low, wearing mama's lipstick and daddy's worn out shirt. I could hear my daddy cheering, mama crying, don't get hurt. And there's a fire out on the prairie, the grass is dry. No good. All my ponies hitched up underneath that pickup's hood. We found a back road way out on the edge of town. Rev those horses up and slam that pedal down. With heads full of stupid and hearts filled with desire, we were racing for the river like our bridges were. Can go. I don't know where I'm going, but there is one thing I know. Don't want to look back in another 20 years on a life that had no laughter, a life that had no tears. Carve on my tombstone after I have died. Before the fire got her, she had
Claudia Nygaard's Prairie Fire, straddling the fence between folk and country with a voice like Amber Honey that is impressive for both its power and intimacy. Claudia Nygaard delivers songs that are heartfelt, humorous, scrappy, and sensual, and so are the stories in between them. She is a captivating storyteller with a twinkle in her eye that makes everyone in the audience think she is sharing a secret with them alone. Emotionally fearless, she shares her deepest sorrows with a rare vulnerability and tenderness one moment, and then a quick wit with an outlandish, irreverent sense of humor the next. Claudia, welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. We've been looking forward to this for quite some time. I'm not sure exactly how I discovered you, but I'm so glad that I did. And absolutely great voice, and you're no newcomer to the music business. But before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about where you're from and maybe a little bit about how you got started in music.
Oh, okay. Well, I was born in Tacoma, Washington, which is where I am right now on tour. But I have actually considered myself a Californian most of my life. I grew up in California. We moved down there when I was about five. And my father was born in Montana and grew up wanting to be in the cattle business. And we started ranching, I guess I was about 9 years old. And my dad worked construction during the week, and we ranched weekends for many years until he could build up a herd that would make enough income that he could retire from doing construction and just focus on ranching. And we had, so I've spent a lot of my childhood with weekdays being carted off to ballet lessons and whatnot in the Bay Area in San Francisco, and then spend weekends tromping through adobe carrying irrigation pipes.
Oh, wow. Wow.
In the San Joaquin.
Hey, there's a funny story that you tell that I have seen on some of your videos. And that's and I know this isn't true, but your dad didn't know you were a girl until you were 13.
Yeah. He had his heart set on a boy. And my mom, you know, he was a 6'6" Montana cowboy with a 36-inch inseam. He was like all legs. And he did his best to emulate John Wayne, you know, and in a lot of ways he did a better John Wayne than John did. But when push came to shove, underneath all that, he had quite a little underbelly, a little, you know, kind of a vulnerability and all. So, you know, Mama didn't have the heart to tell him I was a girl, so she didn't.
Gosh.
Then I got and, back and, to be about.
Yeah, and he was relieved to find out you were a girl, didn't he?
I think so, yeah. By the time I got pretty good at it. You know, I could outfit any boy in the county and had a natural talent for castrating the bull calves, Dad said.
Oh, gosh. Well, when did you get started with your music?
My first time I got started was at age 5. Not far from here in Portland, Oregon. I did a talent show with my cousin who was 3 and I did a lip sync to a song. That was the first time I ever performed in public, but I got serious about music in my early 20s, and I was hanging out with other folk artists who wrote songs, and I got the bug. And I was going to do it for the summer. I was on Cape Cod in Massachusetts. And I thought, well, this would be fun to do for the summer, you know, make some money and, you know, and just then I'll get a real job. And I just never got around to getting a real job.
Oh, gosh. Well, so how did you get from California all the way out to Cape Cod?
Ah, there was romance involved. Well, that is speeding ticket. I was doing the weather on a TV station, actually, when I was in college. And
wow.
I was the weather girl. And I had a boyfriend who was avalanche patrol up at Heavenly Valley. I was in San Jose. And after the 11 o'clock news on Friday nights, I'd periodically, or frequently, jump in my Fiat Spider convertible. And drive up to Heavenly Valley. And, you know, that car just really didn't even out till you hit about 85. You know? And I'd get nailed outside of Placerville. I got 5 speeding tickets in 13 months. That relationship didn't last, and neither did the car, come to think of it. But I ended up a little later getting a letter from the state of California saying, we think you should not drive for a while. Meanwhile, I had met a fellow who is a songwriter and a folk musician in San Jose. And he was getting ready to go to Cape Cod for the summer. He had gone a couple of years for 2 years previous. And we were in love, and he thought I should go with him. And at first I thought, well, no, I can't just do that. I can't just leave and go to Cape Cod for the summer. And then I realized I didn't have a driver's license, so my other options for the summer were rather limited. And I thought, well, you know, I could get a and in those days, you know, it wasn't all computerized, so you could get a driver's license in another state, you know. And I thought, well, if I go to Massachusetts, I can get a driver's license there. You know? So I hate to sound so pragmatic. I really was in love with the guy, but it broke down. My not having a driver's license had a lot to do with my becoming a musician. Because I don't know if I would have gone otherwise. I probably would have tried to get another job in broadcasting and figured, you know, that was my career path. But I just thought, well, you know, I'll just wait till the fall. You know, I'll go up there for the summer, and then I can be with my boyfriend and see where that's going to go. And then where it went was he taught me to play guitar a little better. I had a guitar. I had a high school sweetheart when I was 15, one of my first boyfriends, who bought me a guitar for my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had that guitar, and I had learned to pick out a few tunes on it, but I wasn't really playing on a regular basis. And then, of course, when I went to Cape Cod, then I got a job. Actually, I don't think I knew but about 8 chords, and I got it, and I had hardly more songs than that. And I got a job playing for 4 hours a night in a steakhouse. And man, I had to learn a lot of songs. So I had to practice all day and then play 4 hours a night. And my hands got where in the morning I'd have to like pry my fingers back out of a ball.
You know? Oh my gosh!
They were so sore, and my hands would get so swollen because I'd have to practice during the day to learn new songs. So I'd have enough songs to do the shows. And then I was also, you know, playing all night, which I wasn't used to. So, oh man, that was some tough sweating on my hands. And I had to be terrible. I mean, I was just learning to play the guitar. I could sing already, but I actually went to the Miss California pageant on my singing, but I hadn't been able to play guitar that well, you know. And so, I don't know. I think that was kind of a death by fire, trial by fire experience.
So already you have been a weather girl, and you have been in the Miss California pageant and competed out there. And then California said maybe you shouldn't drive for a while, so off you've gone to Cape Cod and traveled out there. So that's a whole
and
lot
totally
for a young
changed
girl.
My life.
Yeah,
it was just, you know, I was about 21, 22, you know, at the time, and I mean, I was really young, and here I was, you know,
right,
doing
right.
music for a living, and I thought, this is fun, maybe I'll do it for the winter, too, you know, and I was like, and maybe I'll do it next summer, and maybe I'll just do it for the next 30 years or so,
you know,
here I am still doing it.
And here you are still doing it. Well, we're going to play another song right now. Yeah, this is a song called JC. And we may talk a little bit about your festivals that you've been performing at. Kerrville is one of the big ones that you've enjoyed playing at.
Yeah.
Let's take a listen.
I won the Kerrville Folk Festival with JC.
Yeah, well, let's take a listen to JC. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we'll come back and talk more about that when we return on the Campfire Cafe in just a moment on Equestrian Legacy Radio.
Old JC was a laborer. He worked for my dad. He had big old hands and a big old laugh. You should have seen the grin he had. Well, I remember one time when he and his brothers helped Daddy pour a patio. I was a regular tomboy then, a kid about 8 years old. He took off his shirt to work in the noonday sun. So I took off mine till he said, put yours back on. With a child's eyes I couldn't see why anyone wouldn't like old JC. If God could have grinned, he'd have grinned at me. Just like old JC. JC worked in town all week. On weekends he was Dad's right hand. We had 25 cows, 3 horses, a dog, and 100 acres of land. And I had a calf I called Maverick. He had no mama at all. I raised him up all summer. Dad sold him off in the fall. When the meat truck came to get him, my innocence died. With JC's hand on my shoulder, we both cried. With a child's eyes, I couldn't see why anyone wouldn't like old JC. If God could have cried, he'd have cried with me. Just like old JC. And we'd stop for breakfast at this place called Sambo's Restaurant. They had tigers on the menu and a boy that looked like JC and a waitress there with copper hair made a rag doll for me. It was a little black monkey in a little red vest with the initials JC on his chest. With a child's eyes, I couldn't see why anyone wouldn't like old JC. If God could have grinned, he'd have grinned at me. If God could have cried, he'd have cried with me. If God has a face, then it's bound to be a face like old JC. He's got a face just like old JC.
Well, that's Claudia and Igard's award-winning song, JC. And that is from the album, Let the Storm Roll In. So we've taken you to Maine from California, and how long did you stay out there? How long did you stay in Maine?
It was Massachusetts, but it was
Massachusetts. Cape Cod.
And we'd be there for the summers. We went there, but I think about 3 summers in a row.
Wow!
Out there, the first summer I was kind of the singing waitress where Chuck performed, and then the second summer I had my own gigs. After that, and I played. We were playing mostly steakhouses and places like that, you know, bars and clubs and things. And then after Chuck and I broke up, 4 years later, and I moved to Los Angeles, and started playing clubs down there, and then ended up playing fairs. I played fairs a lot for several years. Probably about 10 years, I think.
Wow.
Where I would go to conferences, and I played fairs all over the place. I mean, all over the country. I think I've played over 200 fairs.
Good night.
Yeah, all over the place. Yeah. But I enjoyed playing them. It was a big step up from bars because people, you know, if they didn't like your music, they'd just move on and go look at the quilts or the cattle or something, you know. So you had an audience. People that were into what you were doing rather than in bars where people might be there to just, you know, trying to meet people of the opposite sex or you know, just to indulge heavily in alcoholic beverages or something.
Oh, gosh. Well, so let's go back to JC just a minute. Who did you write that about?
His name was James Charles Watt. And he worked for my dad, just like the song says. He was from Mississippi, and he worked for my dad in construction during the week. And then whenever we had to raise a barn or move cattle or string a fence or something, Dad would hire him to work on the weekends for us. And my dad had a whole crew, you know, guys that worked with him that he would take from job to job when he was construction superintendent. And JC kind of went off working for other companies when I was a teenager, and we lost contact. And then I found him just about 3-4 years ago, And he'd taken a bad fall off of a building, but fell about 18 feet and hurt his back. So he was on disability, and he'd taken the insurance money and moved back to Mississippi and bought 100 acres that butted up against the 300 acres his great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather, I think, had homesteaded when he was freed as a slave.
Wow.
And, and so he had a cattle, and he had 100 acres, and built his own house just like my dad did. And it was such a trip to find him after all those years, to go back down and see him and get to visit and get reacquainted. And he told me a bunch of stories about my dad I didn't know and probably didn't need to know. And and I told him a bunch of stories from dad's later years, you know. But it was just so great to see him again and to be able to have someone, you know, who missed dad like I did. You know,
yeah, yeah,
to talk to him about it.
And well, by that time you had moved to Nashville, hadn't you?
Oh yeah, this was just a couple of years ago when I found JC. I probably wrote the song longer ago than that. I think I wrote the song around 2002 or something. It's been a while because I won Kurgle in 2004, so I probably wrote the song around 2002 or 2003, somewhere in there.
Well, it's a great song.
The song just kind of fell. Well, you know, it was funny because I'd been up in the attic that day looking for some stuff, and I opened this box, and I had a doll in there, and the doll had just completely fallen apart. It was, like, decomposed, and it had a rubber body, and it was all just, like, shriveled up and everything. I was just crushed, and here I had a doll that would go like that, and then I was really old. So I was all bummed out. And as the day progressed, I was thinking about all these toys I had, you know, when I was a kid, and wondering whatever happened to them. Because my mother would send us off to the movies, and then we'd have less worldly possessions to worry about.
Right.
So I was wondering, you know, what happened to all these toys. And I was just sort of thinking about my toys that I'd had as a kid as I was driving around town. And I happened to flash on that doll. And, I mean, this is like, I'm like, completely grown up now, you know, and it dawned on me the significance of the little black monkey.
Yeah.
I thought, wow. Because I didn't think I grew up with any racism. I mean, it wasn't really coming from my family, you know, it was coming from outside sources. But I didn't think, you know, in California, you know, we tended to think we were beyond all that stuff in the South, you know, but it's everywhere.
You know? Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And when I read that, when I thought about that doll and that monkey and realized, because Jay had given it to me, the waitress had given it to Jay, actually, and Jay gave it to me. And I said, I remember saying to him, don't you want to take this home to your boy? Because I thought it was a very cool doll, you know. I didn't know it was a racial slur, you know.
Right.
And he said, no, honey, that's okay. You can have it. You know, when you think of black people, but I mean, he knew I didn't know what that meant. You know,
right.
You know, I'm innocent of that. And it wasn't until then. And when I saw Jay, he reminded me that actually his initials were on the cap. He knew exactly what I was talking about. He said, yeah, it had a little plaid pants and a little plaid vest and a little plaid cap. And he says, my initials was on the cap. He said,
oh, wow. 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 What a story.
So well, so. Yeah. But what a
story.
To see him.
I am sure. I am sure. After all those years, it would have been such a pleasure to visit with him and tell your stories and let him tell you his. Yeah, that is great. Well, there's another song that I want to get to, and this one I just I love this song. This is Miss Kitty, and tell us about this song.
Well, you know, every folk singer needs a protest song, and this is my protest song. I'm protesting not going to kiss her. I had a couple of role models as a kid growing up. One was Donna Reed, whose apron was never dirty and her hair was never messed up, and she vacuumed in high heels. And I thought that was just setting the bar far too high for me. So there was this other woman on TV, and she's like wearing much prettier dresses and having all these adventures and riding horses all the time. And I thought, well, you know, that's the girl for me. That's who I want to be when I grow up. So I adopted Amanda Blake as my hero, and I became a heroine in waiting. And as I grew up, we watched a lot of Westerns when I was a kid. A lot. That's all we watched on television. That's all Daddy wanted to have on. But we got to watching a lot of Gunsmoke. So it was kind of in my head, you know, all along. And then one day, I just thought, well, damn, he never did kiss her, you know. And then I thought, that's a good song. So.
Oh, gosh. Well, let's take a listen to Miss Kitty and come back and talk more with Claudia in just a moment around the Campfire Cafe.
She's self-employed and runs a business out of her home. She lives up over the Long Branch all alone. And not a drunk or a drifter would dare to mess up that red hair. She's Matt Dillon's woman round Dodge. It's real well known. She's got it bad for the big guy with the star. Though he only comes around when there's trouble in the bar. He's got a thing about law and order, or he's an intimacy avoider. She bats them false eyelashes, but don't get too far. And give Miss Kitty a kiss. She's been waiting 30 years for this. So you know her love is true. What the heck is wrong with you? Come on, Marshall, and give Miss Kitty a kiss. She's tried other men in town, but it ain't the same. Doc's too old, and Chester, man, he's lame. All the men she meets are married or gay, and she loves the marshal anyway. She's been climbing the walls so long, don't see the shame. And give Miss Kitty a kiss. She's been waiting 30 years for this. So you know her love is true. What the heck is wrong with you? Come on, Marshall, and give Miss Kitty a kiss.
I love that song. I love that song. And I love Gunsmoke. You know, I've been watching some of the old reruns that they're doing on TV now. And they're doing the half hour. They're doing the half, you know, it went from a half an hour to an hour show. And
I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, yeah. And so I'm watching some of these old half hour shows now, and they're just a ton of fun. But you gotta think that maybe he got a kiss sometime. You know, they just didn't show it.
Nope. No, they came real close to it. It was a December. It was like a Christmas thing in like 1973 or something. I kind of researched this, and he looks like he's gonna kiss her, and then it slides into a hug.
Well, they did a lot of hugging on the show, but they didn't do any kissing. Yeah. So anyway, let's talk about you coming to Nashville.
One more thing, though.
Yeah.
Okay, but one more thing. That's that yodeling in the background. That's Ranger Doug.
Oh, is that Ranger Doug?
Yeah.
That's neat. That is neat. Well, it's talk to us about coming to Nashville. So you were in California and you decided to make the move. Back when?
Yeah, I'd won a bunch. I think it was late '80s. I had won a bunch of songwriting competitions out there in L.A. And I got up my courage, so I started taking my songs around in Hollywood, and everybody kept saying, you need to go to Nashville, girl. You need to go to Nashville. And about the 30th time I heard it, I thought, all right, I'll go. So I sold everything to Wooden Pit and 5x8 U-Haul and made the move. I had wanted to go to Nashville because I really wanted to be a staff songwriter on Music Row. And I finally got a job doing that. I wrote for Lee Greenwood's company for a while. And then I really didn't like it like I thought I would. I really missed performing and didn't really want to write in such a... It's you know, when you write for Music Row, you're writing for a particular format, you know.
Right.
And you write in a certain formula for that. And that was too limiting for me. It wasn't creative enough. So I wanted to just write whatever I wanted to write, you know, and and I missed performing. So I quit, and then I got back into performing live, and I was going to go back and get another writing job eventually. I just thought I'd do it for a little while, and then I never went back again. Kind of like when I got started singing. It was like, well, why would I want to stop doing this when it's so much fun? You
know? Right.
So well, with it.
You how do you go about your writing process? What is your process to write a song?
Well, when I was writing for Greenwood, of course, it was a 9-to-5 job. You know, you went into the cubicle, you went into the office, and you sat in your room. You know, they had like writers' rooms, and you sat in there and you wrote. You know, in the morning, you went and got lunch with somebody, and then you wrote in the afternoon. But usually you had appointments to write with other people, you know, so you have different appointments during the day. But for writing by myself, when I was first starting out writing, I just would write all day long every day, you know, because I guess what they call them now, residencies, where I would be playing at a certain place, you know, probably Thursday through Sunday or something in a club for months at a time. So I didn't have to be booking myself all the time. When I was playing fairs, I had to book myself all the time. So that took up a whole lot more of my time than it did playing clubs. And so I would just sit and write all day during the day. Sometimes I'd write so much that I'd be so tired when I went to work at night that my performance would suffer. But I was just talking to some people at this conference I just attended in Bellevue, and, you know, it's kind of, now I'm at the point where I don't have time to write a bad song. For me now, the song kind of demands to be written. It crawls into my head, and it just sort of hangs out there for a while until it's ready to be born. I mean, I'll get an idea, and then it'll just swirl around, and then all of a sudden it demands to be written, and whatever I'm doing, I end up not wanting to be doing that anymore. I want to get that song written because it starts coming out and I think, oh, I got to write this down. And I think I'm going to just write down just a little part that's in my mind. But what happens is that I pick up the guitar and then I end up finishing the song. You know,
wow.
They just demand to be written basically now. They just go, hey, it's our turn. Never
write
mind
a song.
Booking.
Write a song.
Yeah, pay attention. I'm gonna be born now.
You know? I mean, can you sit down and you write the lyrics and the music at the same time, or how does that work for you?
Well, for me, usually the idea dictates the music. Like with Miss Kitty, I knew it was going to be rollicking, you know.
Right.
It had to be a fun song, you know. So I knew it was going to have that kind of feel of, come on, Marshall, with Miss Kitty. I knew it, I wanted it to be sassy. And, you know, you know, a little bit scrappy. So that kind of dictated where the melody was going to go. And that happens a lot. But for me, usually there's what we call the hook, you know. You know, in that song, they come on, Marshall, give Miss Kitty a kiss, you know. And but you get the hook, and then the hook will drive the rest of the song. The hook, once you have, which sometimes can be the title, but isn't always, you know, the title. But when you have that, when you have the hook, then you know basically what you're building the song around. And so you'll get this idea. I have a song that you're probably going to play today called His Left Side, which is about my father having a stroke. And that was a song that was obviously is you know, that subject matter, it's not going to be rollicking, you know. And I wrote that. I never thought I'd ever play that in public. I thought that was just for me to the catharsis of, you know, the just trying to work through the grief, you know? And then I played it at a cowboy church on a Father's Day one time, and I had 15 people wanted a CD with that song on it.
Oh, wow.
This may have more universal appeal than
appeal.
I thought.
And, right.
Yeah. So I ended up putting it on Let the Storm Roll In. But it was, but they kind of, you know, that one came about because I just needed to work through the grief, you know.
Gotcha.
Sometimes it's just such a good idea that I just think, ooh, I got to do this, you know. And then other times there would be an emotion that I'm trying to work through, if my heart is broken or if I've fallen in love or something, you know, just what something that, like, I want to just get it said, you know.
Yes.
It's...
Well, let's take a
and
listen
time...
to his list. Go ahead.
All right, you say one time one of the songs on my album is my next album, it came from actually something I read on a greeting card. but it stuck in my head. I mean, I read the greeting card like probably 10 years ago, and it stuck in my head. It was a funny thing, you know, that they said. But a whole lot of what I write comes out of my own mouth. Like I've got a song called "I Wonder If I'll Miss You When You're Dead," and it's a funny
song.
Wow.
Okay.
The punchline is, too bad I can't find out tonight, you know, it's the punchline. But it's the payoff line, as we call it in songwriting. But you know, that came about because I was having a glass of wine with a girlfriend and talking about an ex-boyfriend, and she said, well, now, is he the guy that died? And I said, no, unfortunately, he's still alive. And then I thought, oh, that's too funny. I have to write that. So, you know, so sometimes a lot of my songs, I'll be telling something to somebody, and I'll say something and go, oh, I need to write that down. And then I will. And then it becomes a song later.
I understand. People have told me, be careful what you say around a songwriter because it may end up in a song.
You bet.
But let's listen to His Left Side, and we'll come back and talk more with Claudia Nygaard on the Campfire Cafe.
Said I'm coming home soon with a light in his cataract eyes. Once I get over this stroke that messed up my left side. When your mama passed away, Lord, I wanted to die. But now I'm ready to come back home. As soon as I can use my left side. He said those 20 acres, we could plant some corn. I wanna get it in early, before the sheep paper shore. And maybe I'll buy a pony, teach my grandson to ride. There's a lot I'd like to do as soon as I can use my left side. He's going home again, where the sky's so blue, it seems like it won't ever end. He's going home again, where the smell of new mown hay is hanging in. First thing that he'll do is watch the sun rise from the porch. The second thing he'll do is saddle up that quarter horse, and he'll ride and ride and ride as soon as he can use his left side. But outside his room, the doctor said, there's nothing we can do. So I said, Doc, I'd like to take him home, if that's okay with you. Since it was a lovely night, I made his bed up on the porch. I went and got a lead rope, and I brought up his horse. Brought that horse right up the steps, put the rope in his good hand. 'Cause that old man and that old horse, they were real old friends. We stayed out there all night, the man, the horse, and me. He was much too tired to talk, so we waited quietly till the sun came creeping up and the sky turned his head and smiled at me and let that lead roll. Watch the sun rise from the porch. The second thing he'll do is saddle up some quarter horse, and he'll ride and ride and ride where he won't need his leg.
His Left Side, Claudia Nygaard, and that is from the CD Let the Storm Roll In. And I noticed that you had just played at the Strader Theater in Durango, Colorado, a few weeks ago.
Oh yeah, that is.
Yeah, do you enjoy playing out in the Wild West as much as you do back here in the East?
Oh, I kind of prefer it, but don't quote me. For one thing, New Mexico is absolutely one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. I mean, it's just gorgeous. And I played the Cimarron Cowboy Poetry Gathering right before Durango. And, after the show, I was walking back to where I was staying, and I looked up at the sky and saw the whole Milky Way. I mean, so many stars, you can't make out the constellations, you know. And then the hills and the mountains and the cloud formation. I think New Mexico might be the one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. And, matter of fact, I just wrote a song about New Mexico. But anyway, and then Durango is such a cool little western town. You know, it's got, you know, all these old buildings from Wild West days. So it's very picturesque, you know.
Yeah.
But I could live anywhere. I could pretty much live anywhere. It's gorgeous up here in the Northwest. It's raining, of course, in Seattle, you expect it. But it's just, you know, the fir trees that are, you know, 40 feet tall, and just I'm looking out at Puget Sound sitting here at this desk, and it's just gorgeous, just beautiful.
Oh wow.
And everywhere I go, you know, I've performed in 48 of the 50 states, and every time I'm somewhere I think I could live here, you know. I'll be in the Rockies and looking out at a vista and think I could live here, and then I'll be in New York City and think, I could live here. This is fun. You know, I'll be on Cape Cod and on the beach and thinking, I could live here. I'll be in Florida. I could live here. I could live in Texas. I could live anywhere, apparently.
gosh.
I mean,
Nashville is home now, though. So that's kind of a neat. Nashville is a very diverse city, a lot of diversification in the music today. And of course, there's always something going on in Nashville too, but
when it comes to music, Nashville is the best place to be.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. But what is the difference? What would you do differently? Because I know that you're out. You're going to be playing in Oregon and in Washington again for a couple of weeks. Then you're coming back home to Nashville, and you'll be playing at Douglas Corner. Would you play the same music in Durango, for example? Yeah, would you say play the same music?
Probably not. I have so many songs, and for Durango, I was, you know, specifically playing Western music, so I was very focused on, I mean, that was what they were wanting, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I was very focused on, but I mean, I've got, like, you know, I've written a couple hundred songs, so, you know.
Oh, wow.
I have often, you know, so there are some songs that I'm not wildly famous, but I do have a following. That there are certain songs like His Left Side, which you just played, that I kind of have to play everywhere. I mean, I'm going to get complaints if they don't hear it, you know.
Right.
That
right.
And there are three or four songs like that now in my repertoire. But I would say that I'll probably be doing more songs from the upcoming album when I play at Douglas Corner, because.
Okay.
I've not been doing those as much, and they're fun because they're new. Yeah. I'm having a new love affair with those songs.
Well, you're going to have to come back when your new album is out, so we can play some of your new stuff. We would love to do that. Love to do that.
Yeah,
I want to try to get in two more songs, if you'll bear with us. And
sure.
Another song that you've done is Coyote. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that came about because of my dad. My dad has been a plethora of songwriting inspiration, but they used to call him that. My dad, you know, would take on, we had a nuclear power plant not far from our ranch, and my dad took them on. And He had lots of opinions, and sometimes he made up his own statistics to go with them. And so the guys that he has had this group of other elderly ranchers that all met for breakfast all the time. They probably still do. I mean, it's probably an ongoing tradition. And they called Daddy Coyote because he'd get on something, and even after the subject was long dead, he'd still be ranting about it. And I thought, oh, that's such a great metaphor. And so I took it, and of course, for me, it was a love song. It was about being in love with someone and not being able to let go of it, even when the relationship was over. But that's where it came from, calling Dad Coyote.
Calling Dad Coyote. Well, let's take a listen to Coyote, and we'll come back and talk with Claudia Nygaard for just a few more moments on the Campfire Cafe.
He separated from the pack, crossed the river, now he can't get back. You hear his lonely howling cries, see the heartache in his yellow eyes. That coyote feels just like I do. He's as lost as I am without you. Picked up a scent, got a crazy look, and off he went. He don't care if it's alive or dead, either way he knows that he'll get fed. The buzzards try to beat him to his prize, till they see the whiteness in his eyes. I'm just like that coyote, can't leave something dead alone. The love is gone, but the scent still lingers, and I'm howling over the bones. I'm just like that coyote, I can't leave something dead alone. Was bound to end this way. There ain't nothing we could say or do that could make it work for me and you. But my heart just won't leave it alone. Choose it over like a coyote on the phone. And I'm just like
Coyote, Claudia Nygaard, and you've just been so much fun to talk with today. I'm looking forward to having you come back. Yeah.
Well, thanks so much. I enjoyed it too.
Well, tell us a little bit about where you're going to be performing for the next few weeks and maybe months.
Well, I'm trying to stay home a little bit, get this record done, but I'll be, of course, I'm in Oregon. I'm around Portland this weekend, Friday and Saturday night, and then I'm going to be in Washington on Sunday, then I'll be flying home, and I'll be home for, I don't know, 2 weeks or 10 days, something like that, and then I head down to Texas, and, then I go to New Mexico,
yeah,
and I'm going to play out there, And then I'm home for about a week, I think, and then I go down to Texas. And all of the shows are, of course, on my website. If somebody
give us your website.
Check out my website.
Give us your website.
It's ClaudiaNygaard.com. It's C-L-A-U-D-I-A, N like Nashville, Y-G, A-A-R-D as in dog, .com. And there's a little tab there where people can watch videos of the songs. You can go to the navigation tab at the top and click on videos. There's a bunch of videos there. And then there's also my tour schedule. So click on shows and show. And if they sign up for the mailing list, then they'll get to know when I'm coming to a theater near them.
All right. And where can they get your music? Can they get that off of your website as well as the normal venues, CD Baby and that type of thing?
Yeah. Yeah, they can get it. There's also a tab that says store, and they can, can buy it from there, or they can go through iTunes or CD Baby if they do that.
All right. Well, you are just so much fun. I'm going to try to catch you at Douglas Corner when you're in town later this month. And you've got a couple of concerts coming up in Oregon the next few days. And then you're going to be at the WMA convention, I think, in New Mexico a little bit later in November. And so you've been a lot of fun. We're going to close the show today out with a great song called Montana Wind. Can you tell us a little bit about that one?
Well, that's a dad song too.
All right.
When my father passed, I inherited his rope and gloves and his cowboy hat, and I couldn't toss him, you know, or his saddle. I got his saddle and his rope and gloves and his, and they're all sitting in my house, you know. It's sort of like waiting for him to come back, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, as I was looking at him one day, I thought, man, you know, those old rope and gloves, you know, those are something to see. And so that hat. And then I started thinking about, I've had a long time wondered, you know, I've got one line in the bridge about a sunset. And there's a thin gold now I can't think of it. I'm a little brain dead this morning. On the horizon, fades back to red and then blue. And if you watch it a long time, it don't seem surprising. The other side could shine right through. I just wonder sometimes, you know, if people can, when they get to the other side, see through.
Yeah.
You know, there are places. Well, the places where it's thin is the way somebody I read wrote about it. And so that's kind of, it's a story about my dad growing up being born in Cut Bank and meeting my mom. And then it's a lot about, it's a lot about that old blue northern too.
Right. Well, this is Montana Wind. It's by Claudia Nygaard, and it is from the CD Somewhere Else to Go. I'm sorry, Let the Storm Roll In. And Claudia, so much fun to have you on the show today, and we look forward to having you back with us. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. I look forward to it, too.
All right. Montana Wind, Claudia Nygaard.
On a cold winter's night, up in Cut Bank, with a midwife at her side, with one good push left, she took a deep breath, and then heard that baby's first cry. As folks heard that blue northern came whistling down through the treetops as the moon lit the snow bright as day, and God's creatures drew near the better to hear what the wind had to say as it whispered our boy's on his way. Well, about 25 winters later, in a small town up on the divide, he popped the question and then held his breath till she said she'd be his bride. And as he let that breath go, the wind sighed. It came whistling down through the treetops as the moon lit the snow brightest day, and God's creature some rope and gloves worn nearly through. They've seen their last days in the wind and the rain, and that old cowboy has too. So he lets go the last breath he drew. What the wind had to say as it whispered our boy's on his way. It goes whistling down through the treetops as the moon lights the snow brightest day, and God's creatures draw near. The wind has to say as it whispers our boy's on his way.
Montana wind. Claudia and I guard, and so much fun to have Claudia on the show today and visit with us. And if you're out in the Washington and Oregon area this weekend, be sure and try to catch a show there. Visit her website, ClaudiaNygaard.com. And we will not be doing Saddle Up America this week. Robert Eversole, many of you know that Robert had a horse wreck a few months ago, and Robert had a doctor's appointment today. And so he's not with us. But we'll be back next week with Saddle Up America, as well as the Campfire Cafe, starting at noon Central Time on Equestrian Legacy Radio. We want to thank you for joining us today. And as always, we remind you, if you climb in the saddle, get ready for the ride on Equestrian Legacy Radio. Right now, we'll close the show out with a song called Blue Shadows on the Trail by Roy Rogers and the Sons of the Pioneers. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. Shades of night are falling as the wind begins to sigh, and the world is silhouetted against the sky.
Blue shadows on the trail, blue moon shining through the trees, and a plaintive wail from the distance comes a drifting on the evening breeze.
Move along, blue shadows, move along. Soon the dawn will come, and you'll be on your